Recordings are started.
Thank you very much, Phil. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the NCSG XCOM meeting on Friday, 25th November 2016. On the call today, we have Tapani Taravainen, Consulate Ilelady. Apologies from Monica Zelnerite. And from staff, we have myself, Mariam Bakoshi. I'd like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much. Over to you, Tapani.
Thank you, Mariam. So this is Tapani Taravainen for transcription purposes. And we really have nothing else on the agenda but going through member applications. And we'll have to let the missing members of our committee to review them later. I trust you have the spreadsheet open. Oh, Robin, welcome. So we're just starting to review the member applications. I trust you have the spreadsheet open with the names. You can also see them at the discussion notes there for just briefly. First one we have is Wisdom Donker, who has been a regular in NCSG mailing list already as a representative of some organization which I now forget. He's applying to become an individual member. He's noting Graphic as his reference. An affiliation with me, well, I'm not sure if I affiliated with him, but I know him certainly, and he's been active and useful as far as it goes in our member list, in NCSG list. I have no reason to doubt his in any way, but maybe you other have comments, Robin Ponsalat, opinions and wisdom. Robin, please. Can't hear you, Robin. You have a problem with your mic or something.
Can you hear me okay?
Now we can hear you. Go ahead, please.
Hi, can you hear me? This is Robin.
Yes, we can hear you. Right.
Can anybody hear me? Hello? 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 Oh, you can hear me. Okay. Okay, I was just going to say we've got an individual member who wants to also represent a group in NCSG. Well, you know, in the past we said you can't do both. You can either be an individual or you can represent a group, but you don't get two votes. You know, when we send out our ballots, for example, it goes to one email address, and you know, you could have one person with receiving two ballots, and that it sounds like that's what is being proposed here. And I don't know if you guys have been on the committee long enough to remember this, but we've said you have to pick. You can either represent an individual or you can represent an organization, but it's one or the other. Okay. I don't hear anyone.
No, I agree with you, Robin. I punctually speaking for the records, I agree with you. And when I saw the name...
I must have done something here to turn off my... ability to hear. It doesn't say my
speaking.
There we go. Okay. Now I can hear.
Okay, Ponsley speaking. I when I saw the name, I flagged it off because I know he's been contributing to the NCSG mailing list, and I was and then I know him personally. I just saw that he was representing a membership organization. So the only question that we ask, does he want to, is that association that he joined under, joined as NCUC, does he want to deactivate the association and be considered as an individual member? If he doesn't want to do that, then his application should be turned down and we should only allow him as a representative of the organization. That's what I would say. And just to, because you cannot be both, as Robin rightly said. Thank you.
I have to correct you that we have discussed this any number of times, and you always concluded that it is actually possible within our rules. And we have several members who are both individual members and receive distinct ballot for both. We can, of course, go back and look at the records, but if you read our rules, and I'm quite sure we have had this discussion a number of times and always concluded that our press rules do not forbid that.
Well, my memory is very different than that. My memory is you only get one ballot and you need to pick. So we need to have a discussion about this. Like, who exactly are these people that you get two ballots?
Yes.
Who are these people that receive two ballots? This is news. This is something that I thought we had decided years ago couldn't happen.
Yes.
So I'm wondering how this happened.
We have discussed this a number of times. The conclusion always has been that maybe we should change it, but at the moment, rules do not forbid it. And there are several people, as I said, notably including...
Who does Didi represent? Didi represent somebody? Who does Didi represent? Because I'm not aware of anybody who gets two ballots.
Well, you are now, because I do. But it's...
So how many years have you received two ballots?
Ever since
ever since
the FFI joined, I think I was an individual member first.
And then, okay, so it should have been transmuted.
Well,
okay, so if we as those who are receiving two ballots, then we got to bring this up to we need to take this up as an issue because maybe before you were a member of the executive committee, this is what we did, and then nothing like this has happened since you've joined.
No, it has happened. It has been discussed a number of times. I'm quite sure it has been, because I remember bringing this up quite a few times. It always the conclusion was that there is nothing against it in our rules. The charter doesn't forbid it, and there have been such cases. There are others. We can look them up, but there are several.
Well, that really counters my memory of this, and I have a big problem with one person receiving two ballots. If you want to represent an organization, represent an organization. If you want to be an individual, be an individual. But the idea that you get both, like, double-dipping to me.
Yeah, well, that's arguable. We should change the charter then or make a decision otherwise. But at the moment, so far, it hasn't been, and it has been discussed in the past, and the conclusion has been that it is perfectly legal.
Well, before it wasn't, so this is news. Before your time, it wasn't. So if it's changed since you've been chair, and I haven't noticed, and I'm noticing now, and I'm concerned.
I asked about it in 2013, actually, when I joined the NCUCEC. The first time I remember asking about it.
Well, I think we need to take this to the members. I think we need to have a discussion with the members. If this is going to be the decision of the chair, that we can't have, that people can't have.
Making a decision as a chair. I'm just noting that this is the way it has been since
quite a long time. What I'm telling you is before you were chair, it was decided a different way. So if now you're saying it's something different, I think this is a big deal that people are receiving two ballots.
Actually. If you want, I can look
Robin,
up
Robin.
From 2013, way back at least.
Robin, if I might speak, Ponsley speaking.
Ponsley, go ahead.
If you look at the chat, Miriam has just been typing members that are both individual members and representing organizations. And I'm saying about 1, 2, 3,
yeah, more than
5 names.
But I'm saying, like, just recently was named APC's representative, so that's something that slipped under our radar in terms of, you know, her receiving two votes. Didi, that's news to me that she gets two ballots. Some of these other people, I think they joined. I don't even recognize their names. I think they joined very recently, and so this is something that has perhaps slipped under our radar. And I think it's something we need to talk about. Is it appropriate that one person receives two ballots? If it is, in fact, an organization, you know, does the same person who receives an individual ballot need to be the one that receives organizational ballot? Because then it's just...
Okay, yes.
Exactly. So it could be someone different for the organization.
There are two situations.
Like, I say, for instance,
okay. May I explain a little background? At least I know of two situations, different cases where this occurs. The first is that the member is an individual first and then persuades the organization to join as well and remains an individual member. The other case is that an organization representative becomes interested and wants to be an individual member. I think we have both cases. Certainly the first one has happened. And I'm not sure if it would make a big difference if that have to nominate a different representative for the organization. But, of course, I'm happy to do that if you like to propose it. But I don't see anything against it. Charter against it, and it has certainly been discussed before. I'm quite sure we have discussed it actually before, but it certainly has been discussed way back in. I remember asking about that when AFFI joined, which was I think 2013.
And I'm sure we would have said then somebody else needs to represent the organization.
No, definitely, what didn't? Because I'm quite sure we can look it up. Anyway, it's not in the charter. We can try to make a decision that we shouldn't do that.
Well, I'm going to vote no. If he's already an individual member, I'm going to vote no. And
no,
I mean,
he's
not
an individual member.
Well, okay, I'm going to vote no if he's an organization member.
Okay, we can do that. But there is no...
This is kind of an issue. I mean, I don't mean to cause a problem here, but I actually think this is a big deal, that we've got people who are receiving two ballots, and... This is against my understanding. You say it's the way you've already done it, fine, but it's against my understanding. And I think it's something that we need to talk about, that we really need to think about. Do we want one person to receive two ballots, one with four votes and one with one vote? Because that seems like we are inviting an opportunity for gaming if we do it that way. What's to stop everyone from doing it that way if you can get a lot more extra votes that way?
Well... I don't totally agree with anything myself, because I'm not sure how it should be. I'm just noting that that's the way it has been.
I totally agree. Someone cannot be getting two votes, individual and organized. So I think we should start changing it now. We should turn down this application. And then we put it to the mailing list that, I mean, I'm just knowing this, and Robin, you have been chair before. You said maybe it didn't come under your radar. And our current chair, Tefani, said he has noted that there's nothing in our charter that excludes this. But since it has come to our attention within this EC, I think we should bring it up and say, if you want to be... your association to be in NCUC and you want to be an individual member, someone else should represent your association in NCUC. So there's a separate, so we know that it's one person, one vote. Because when you look at it with all electoral guidelines, any election in the world, I mean, someone is getting two votes. You know, so to me it's not fair and it's not right. So I think we should just use this. As we are reviewing these applications now, Wisdom is already, his organization is a member. We are not going to accept him as a member. He either replaces someone with him or something else.
Okay, thank you, Ponsalet and Robin. As I said, it has been discussed before. It has not been a problem before. But, of course, we can bring this up. And then we'll have to actually also decide what do we do with existing members who are doing that. Because otherwise we would be treating people unequal. It would be a problem for me. I can easily get someone else as an EFFI representative here. That I asked about that a number of times way back then, whether I should do that. And nobody said there is no real reason for that. But if you are willing to do that, okay, we shall have to, I guess we'll have to take this to the member discussion list at some point. But for now, we'll reject or suspend this application at least pending. Or do you want to reject outright or pending under discussion later on? I'm happy either way.
Robin, what do you suggest?
Sorry, I didn't get my phone off the mute there. Okay, so yeah, why don't we just reject pending the discussion? So, you know, we kind of leave it open. I mean, I don't think it's fair that people can have multiple votes, but we'll leave it open for now while we have some questions from our members about this, and then based upon that discussion, maybe make our final decision. That would be my recommendation.
Okay. Fair enough. I concur.
Yeah, fair enough. We'll do that. Okay, let's move to the next one. Arti Bhavana, whom I know well, at least. I presume you others have seen her somewhere. Recommending Stefania. And she has been around as a representative, but I don't think she's now. I have to check that. I'm pretty sure she isn't. Mariam? And you check, I guess Arti has been around, but I don't think she's been a member in representative or anything.
But no.
Correct?
I'm checking. No, she's not on the NCUC database.
How about NCSG? Because that's what we are concerned here about, not NCUC.
I'll check that in a minute. On the NCSG.
Yeah, that matches my recollection, so we don't have this particular problem there. Opinions on Arti? Okay, Robin voting yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Consulate? Agreed, so
yes.
Arti is...
Yes, also.
Okay, Arti has been accepted pending the later approval by Monica and Joan. Next, we have Liz Rembo. It's news to me, you know, nothing about her.
Yes, I know her personally, and I know her. She's very, what do you call it? She's within the Kikanet community in Nairobi, just like Grace, who recommended her. And I think she fits appropriately here. Yeah. So I know her very well.
Okay, sponsor at supporting how it seems that the link is the LinkedIn link correct? Can you, let's see. Okay, if it's not in the link form. If anybody can get LinkedIn open to check that.
Yeah, I don't need to open it because I know her personally.
I
know her background.
As a matter of principle, we should be able to verify that.
Okay, let me do that.
One of the conditions we have is that the LinkedIn address given should work. Can't find it, at least by the name given.
It's, you know, her full name, it's opening on my PC. Her full name is Elizabeth. She's writing it as Liz. It's opening now on my system. Her full name is actually Elizabeth. And it's there. The linking is opened, and her linking file states like what she does. She's a volunteer with the Internet Society Kenya chapter, which runs Kikanet, I know that. And then she has a company where she works in, chief communication officer for Aquascope. Yeah. Yeah, that was there.
Okay, I found it, but but the point remains that in the application it was wrong. In the past, we have generally, in that case, requested correction opinions. Shall we do so now? Because we found the correct one, now correct it there, Robin?
Yeah, I think you know, in the past, it's just been a question of we can't figure out who this person is when we get a wrong LinkedIn application, but this is someone who consulate knows is vouching for, and now we've got the correct LinkedIn application, so I see no reason not to approve this one. Thanks.
Yeah. Okay, I'm happy with that, so let's approve her again, pending Jones and Monica's approval later. Next, we have Mohd Abdul Nagem. Oh, I don't know anything about. She said, Internet is an integral part of our living. One can't think of knowing the world without Internet. Hence, the flow of information requires understanding about the nuances, the norms, procedure for free flow of information. I think that being a member of NCSC, I would be able to understand this relationship more deeply. There is no link again of LinkedIn entries. Not a LinkedIn entry. Anybody know this person? If not,
I don't know him.
We'll have to.
And,
okay, I think we'll have to ask for the correct LinkedIn entry, at least in that case.
More information.
We want to ask something specific besides the LinkedIn correction. Robin, do you think?
I think the LinkedIn, since we are using it, I mean, we should get just more information. He should send us his LinkedIn profile. Yeah.
So no, either correct LinkedIn or something. If he doesn't actually have a LinkedIn profile, we can live with that if he otherwise provides enough information. But on the basis of this alone, we can't really accept it. Okay, so left pending request for LinkedIn page. And perhaps if he wants to provide additional explanation of his interest in the DNS system, it would both be helpful, but LinkedIn is the minimum. Okay. Next, Aynam Ali from Jordan. I'm interested to build more capacity.
Also, I know her personally. Yes. She was a fellow, she was an ICANN fellow some years back, and she's very involved within the IG community in Jordan.
And the LinkedIn page seems to work.
Yes.
Okay. Robin, you have your hand up. Consulate approving. Joan just joined us. Okay.
Sorry about that.
Okay. So, Joan, a big review on what we've been doing. So, we first had a major debate about some history, the first entry here, because wisdom is already representative of an organization, and we sort of realized we have different historical memories of whether that's acceptable or not. So we decided to leave that pending until we resolve that, probably by discussion on the list.
Okay.
We approved Artie and Liz Rembo and decided to leave Mr. Nayem working too, because it's Mohd Abdul Nayem pending because his LinkedIn address was wrong. And now we're discussing Inam Ali.
Yes.
Consulate has approved and telling that he sort of knows Ali, and also is referring to Joao Caribe as well and a few others. Other Cognizance and Ina Mali. Robin?
Okay, I just, sorry, it took me a second to get off mute there. Yeah, I'll vote yes. Thank you.
Joan?
I'm not in the document yet, but I did look at them before, and I don't recall that one. If we could just leave that for a second until I get to it, but I would say I approve of not. I think that there was a reason. So, and I can't find my. There we go.
You find the document yet?
No. I have it bookmarked, but my computer is for the. Here.
The link in the chat for you.
Yeah, oh, I found the area. Sorry about that, guys. I got held up. Here we are. Sorry about that. Yeah, don't be. Yeah, I didn't think there was a reason why. Yep, I'm good.
Okay, so Ina Mali is approved, pending Monica's approval later. Next, Lucas Moura from Brazil mentions that he's a volunteer at PDB on GTDLD registration data services, so, and some words already. And after participating as a fellow in ICANN 57, decided NCSC is one place that fits to cooperate. Referring to Eden Federline, a Bruno Ribeiro. The LinkedIn page seems to be a bit broken. Let's see if we can fix that. Yeah, there's some extra characters around. Anybody know Mr. Moraya? Mr. Mora? Sorry.
No.
Okay, can you get the... okay, I'll get the...
No, I don't know him, but from what I've opened the link in, from what I've seen, he wrote, he sounds a perfect fit.
The LinkedIn entries actually sort of works. It just has a little extra character, so I pasted that correct link, and it seems what he lists in his LinkedIn page is that he's a C-Suite member and anti-fraud analyst at Axor Information Security. Doesn't tell much. Well, LinkedIn is the job description anyway. Opinions? Does Mr. Moura look good to you?
For me, he's good. I mean, the LinkedIn is not too detailed, but to me, he's good based on what he wrote. Secondly, he volunteered within the PDP process on the GTLD. And registrant and data services, and who recommended him to Aiden. I mean, I'm fine with him.
Yeah, and Aiden is pretty good, so, yeah.
Okay, Robin?
Yeah, I agree. Well, there's not a ton of information here. There really isn't anything that's disqualifying, and he's got Aiden and Renata as being his references, so I'm inclined to vote yes on this one. Thanks.
Yeah. Me too.
Okay, thank you, Robin. Joan?
Yes, same here. His recommendations are good.
Okay, agreed. So, approved, pending Monica's review later. We have one more. Kiran Kumar, a freelance writer who wants to contribute to the internet governance topics at ICANN meetings. Very little information otherwise. No LinkedIn page, nothing else. opinions? Anyone?
I think he needs to provide more information.
Yeah.
More information.
Okay. So the standard question that we have, yes. What is your non-commercial interest in the domain name system?
Yes.
And if you have any additional explanations or links or whatever would be helpful, but otherwise that's the normal thing. Okay.
And I just want to point out, just one quick thing, it's JK, not JR, just in case you guys replaced me without me knowing.
Oh, Joanna, I just saw it. Edit it yourself, man. When you updating your votes, just edit it.
Okay, let's move on. We have us all new applications have linked. There are no new organization that I believe, but look at what we have under review. It's Muhammad Adil Ali. We sent request for more information. Mariam, apparently no reply.
Hi, Kapani. We usually give a month for reply, but this is a short time. So I don't know if you want to assess that or wait till the next EC meeting for them to reply.
Yes, I think we want to wait. I just want to check with you that there has been no reply. I said 2 weeks is too short. It's less than 2 weeks, about a little more than 2 weeks.
Yes.
Anyway, we want to wait for a month. So leave pending until next meeting if there has been no reply. Okay?
Yes.
Yes, agreed.
Agreed.
Next, Abdelhamid Al-Rahamneh. The same situation. Okay, we have a reply already with the correct new LinkedIn entry. See what that looks like. Director General at National Information Technology Center. That's impressive, but whether that's does not indicate exactly non-commercial interest that I can see. But he's a member of the Eyes of Jordan. Some references.
Yeah, he's a member of Eyes of Jordan.
And so, opinions? Anyone?
I'm fine.
I'm fine.
Yeah.
Joan?
Yeah, he looks good to me.
Robin?
Oh, but yes.
Okay, let's approve him then again, bending consulate, Monica later. Oh, by the way, please mute your mics when you're speaking. There's some background noise going on. Next one, we have David Walters. Again, the same situation as the first one. Apparently, no response yet. Is that correct, Mariam?
Is that correct for every other one? This is the only one who has replied, Dohamid. Yeah.
Okay, I guess we can simply bundle the rest together that all the others who have been sent requests for information and haven't replied yet, we wait until next meeting. We have three of those here. Is everybody happy with that? We have three others, David Walters, Ahmed Rimas, Fazabadi, Nitin Walia, and Nikhilesh Kumar, and they are all in that situation. So I'll leave them all pending until next meeting to reply. Do we have one organization?
Yes, I do. Concord.
Okay, let's have a look at the organization under review with Spurt Media Development. And the same situation there, I believe. Again, sent request and no reply yet. Is that correct, Mariam?
Yes, that's correct.
So I guess we'll treat that the same way. Wait until our next call. No objections? Okay. So that was for the member applications. that, or at least was routine, except the first one, which had some interesting discussion that we have different historical recollections, but we'll return to that later. Has anybody had time to look at the member removal process procedure we discussed about in Hyderabad when possibly didn't get around to finishing? We want to discuss it now. I must confess I haven't had time to look at it any better since that time, but we can pick it up and see if anybody has any comments, or should we continue that on the list or next time with more time to prepare. Robin, are you interested in walking us through that, what remains at this point, or leave it until later?
Well, I'm happy to do it either time. I know we went through it in Hyderabad. I'm trying to remember sort of where we left off, what our next steps were from there. I know we had some discussion, and we said, okay, maybe we should flesh this language out a little bit more. Is that where we are? And this is more of a question than anything. Should I go back to that document now, or does somebody else want to go back to that document now and flesh it out? Because a lot of what was done there was, you know, kind of bullet point format and some language, really, some meat on the bones there, something that we could then take to the members and to start a discussion going there. So I guess maybe this is my question is do folks need more discussion at this high level point of view, or do you think we've gone through it enough that we can now just start building out the putting meat on the bones of what's actually there as opposed to adding new things or taking new things out?
As I remember it, we got something where, like, halfway through the document, they were going it through point by point and did not get anywhere complete to the end.
Okay.
Unfortunately,
okay.
I don't remember exactly how far we got, but I think we should do that, finish that before putting it to the members and certainly put some more details as well. Do you have the link for the document somewhere? Because I have lost it, of course, at the meantime.
Yeah, I will grab it. I think I've got it here.
There
we go.
The chat.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Now, how far did we get?
Let's see.
I remember we discussed that we noted that a number of these criteria in our charter are a bit vague and need to be clarification.
Yeah.
So that's why it's good to write them up here.
Yep.
Let's see. Where was this? Yeah, I think we were going through this criteria here. That, like, somewhere there was some of these things that was U.S. legal language that we needed to put in. Okay, in the case of membership-based organizational member, that's where we left off.
Okay.
And that's the text from the charter, but it's very specifically a U.S. legal language.
Right, the text from the charter, but our charter is a bit vague about what it means by membership-based. We knew what we meant when we drafted this, but somebody else coming along later, it was very confusing too. There's membership in the legal sense, or, you know, lots of organizations have members, but they're not in the legal sense a membership-based organization. So that should be clarified.
Yes, especially since that notion actually is very much a U.S. Legal language, which does not work as such in all other countries. So we should have a generic description here that works everywhere, at least understandable.
The problem is, in a sense, maybe, or maybe this isn't a problem. Maybe, actually, I'm going to take that step back. It's not a problem. Because our solution is, rather than having to go through a whole amending the charter process, which, you know, is going to be an enormous undertaking, these kinds of things will just be part of the operating procedures, including what we mean by some of this stuff, but like membership-based organization. If we can clarify that stuff in these operating procedures, which these are to be a part of, then I guess we don't really have a big problem.
Yes, that's actually, I think we don't need to modify the charter if we can write it up in such a way that is consistent with the charter and Mary clarifies what it means and how it applies in non-US based organizations and so forth.
Yeah.
So actually, I'm afraid we need someone with US legal experience a bit to do that up for us, and somehow I can't help asking you, Robin, to do that because you're the only US lawyer amongst us.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I'm happy to do that. I'm happy to do that. So this is easy for me.
write a description of what this means in such language that it's understandable to non-Americans and non-lawyers.
Right. Yeah, and I'd actually like to hear from Monica and some of the other lawyers about, you know, what do their countries have when they talk about membership-based. You know, is the U.S. really the only country in the world that has the concept of a legal membership-based organization, or are there others that are similar, and we need to take those into account when we formulate this as well?
I'm sure there are others with some kind of type. In Finland, we have some, for example, organizations that can have both individual and organizational members, or they can have only one or the other.
Yeah.
And everything between. But it's not. I don't have a specific concept of a membership, not organization. That's only. It's not a different type of legal entity if you have only organizational members. It's just one line in your rules saying what kind of members you can have. So I'm not sure how I would apply this. Yeah.
We follow the Commonwealth here in Gambia. I mean, it's mostly British law. So I'm sure, I mean, Joanne in Canada, I'm sure it will be similar because it's mostly British law. So.
Yeah, okay, I think we can come up with a description here that makes sense.
Yeah.
And works for others.
Yeah, I'm just kind of brainstorming here about what we need to be, that's what I need to be thinking about in the next steps of fleshing this out.
Okay. And when you look, let's move on down the list here. We see that organizational member is listed as category of ineligible organization. I guess that would mean that the organization has become ineligible by changing its nature in such a way. Because we are looking at removal drugs here. But otherwise, this is reasonably clear at which point we should write it in this document in such a way that, and all of this actually, that an organization has changed to be, or now is kind of ineligible for whatever reason. So.
Yeah, if they lose their nonprofit status in whatever country they're in, then that would disqualify them for nonprofit status with us, I think, is the concept behind that one.
Do we need to write this up? There are several categories here. Are they all obvious enough that they don't need to any more elucidation or writing up what they mean? Okay, political organization. Okay, that's, I can think of an example that in Finland it's possible for normal association to become a political party by going through certain formalities. So that would be a clear case of that happening. It usually happens only if they actually want to be that. Okay, Joan, you have your hand up.
Hi, Joan. I had to clarify something regarding membership and non-commercial. In Canada, and I'm sure it's in the States and everywhere else as well, a lot of organizations are forming what we call the social group to make money, almost like a fundraising arm of the organization. But it's, in Canada, it's seen as a it's sort of a in a gray area at the moment. But for the most part, it's seen as a non-commercial because the profits go back into the organization and are dedicated to the umbrella organization's activities. Is that something that we should be addressing now? So for example, it's seen as a separate entity, but it was started by an organization. So it's a little bit of a gray area, but it is something that's really, really has it's blossoming, it's just blooming. So is it something that we should be talking about specifically?
Robin?
Yes.
It's something that
just raise your hand when you want to speak. We are having Robin.
Sorry.
I was just going to suggest that I don't think it's that dissimilar to what we've had in the past, and where we've got associations are formed of groups or individuals, and they're formed for a particular purpose. Maybe it's a for-profit purpose, maybe it's a not-for-profit purpose. So it kind of depends upon what's the purpose of these underlying organizations and that they're getting together. So, you take, for example, something like the Motion Picture Association of America, the MPAA. Well, technically, that association is a not-for-profit association, but they wouldn't be eligible within NCSG because it is an association of for-profit companies who work together for profit as part of the MPAA. So they wouldn't qualify under our rules because they're really working towards commercial enterprise. And then another case where we have organizations, like the ACLU or the EFF or lots of nonprofit organizations also maybe sell T-shirts or stickers on their website. And so somebody could say, this is a commercial activity. But, really our response to that is, this is just how they're funding their non-for-profit work. These are non-for-profit organizations that are not working for the profits of T-shirt sales, but are using the T-shirt sales to further their not-for-profit work. So it sounds to me, so correct me if I misheard what you said, Joan, but it sounds to me like what you're talking about are organizations that are part of this latter category where they might be engaging in a commercial activity, like selling T-shirts on their website, but if what they're really doing with those proceeds and with, what the organization is really about is this not-for-profit mission, then I think that's the important part, and that's where these organizations, that it sounds like that you're talking about, would fit under. Does that sound right to you, or is this something totally different from those situations?
John?
Thanks. Yes and no. So how we see, and this is from a Canadian context, that's why I'm asking, how we see selling T-shirts or cups or pens or whatever on the non-profit website is an activity, okay? So you could do them at events, so you could do them online. But what is emerging as a new business model is the social enterprises that is a separate entity. So they have their own branding and a different name. But they're called social enterprises. That's what we call them here. I think in the States they refer to them as B Corps. But they're started by an existing not-for-profit. And the funds from the new entity, the new ABC entity, goes back to the original organization. But it is run like a business.
Sounds a little bit like a hybrid, maybe, of the two models we had talked about.
So how shall we write this in this text, or do we need to clarify it here? Anybody want to draft text? Robin?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm happy to try to. I think before I did that, I'd want to go do a little bit of independent research, you know, just try to wrap my mind around this concept completely from a legal perspective and so I really understand what it is that we're talking about, and then try to incorporate that into this document as well. And then, you know, we can open that up for discussion and see if folks are happy with it. Because I'm not really sure at this point. I kind of want to... I think Joe's raised a really important issue that we might want to look at a little bit more carefully before, you know, really coming down on one way or the other.
Okay, thank you. Poncelet, you have your hand up.
Yes, what I just wanted to say, I think I'll leave it to the legal minds in the EC. Ms. Robin is taking the lead with based on things Joanne has said, because I know in some certain parts of the world, like you have the social enterprises, they are, what they raise, they are giving it out to the primary NGO, so it's just like a hybrid and stuff like that. So that social enterprise, I will still consider them as not-for-profits, but I think since Robin said she's going to do more research on it and put it from a legal mind, I'll take that for as we need to do it so that clarity is done, especially since you have a lot of sort of social enterprises that are also not for profit now springing up, not only in the West, but even in developing countries. Thank you.
Thank you, Poncelet. Robin, your hand is still up. Is it an old hand? Do you want to speak again? Okay. Before we go on, I want to return back to something we discussed earlier. It turns out that we were wrong about Wisdom Donkor. He's not a representative of any organization. Instead, he actually is already an NCUC individual member. He's just mistakenly applied again, so we don't have to make a decision about him. The question remains, however, if we want to do a principal decision on this or try to move or for charter review or whatever about other people who are in that position. Maybe I suggest we put that on the agenda for our next call and whether or not we want to discuss it in the public list before that to you, but for now, we don't have to make any decision about it at this call anyway. Okay, Poncelet, you have your hand up.
Yes, I think, okay, it's good you got clarity on Wisdom. Also, I don't know how Kwame decided to apply again. Well, I mean, with, I'm just knowing it for the first time. So I think, as was suggested earlier on, we should put it to the list and see what happens. And then it's on our next call based on feedback we get from the list. Yeah.
Yeah, of course it is, and one of those things that would be most likely end up on the charter review items, but it's not urgent anymore. And frankly, I think it would be better to postpone the discussion until NCUC elections are over to distract. But of course, anybody can open the discussion on the list at any time. So back to the business at hand of this member removal procedures. Are there any other points about this organizational member categories that should be opened up? Most of these seem to me obvious enough in that at most rephrase them in such a way that if they get a contract with ICANN or become government organization, I'm not sure how that could happen, or become into governmental organization probably comprised of nation states. I guess that's theoretically possible that some other members get too many nation state members, but for now I think it's enough just to list them that if their status changes in that respect. Or anybody have any more on that, or shall we look at the individual members category? Seeing no hands up, let's look at what the proposal is for individual members. The first one, an individual member who does not support non-commercial public interest positions within the stakeholder group. Now that is somewhat potentially dangerous, difficult meeting, opening that that would be basically we'd have to evaluate the behavior and performance of someone. I guess that the support here means activity that can be documented somewhere we cannot read people's minds. Would this mean, for example, that somebody openly advocates some position that we have agreed on, that against some position that NCSC has agreed on, or what kind of actual behavior would this indicate? I'm not quite sure. Robin, you feel like opening this up?
Sure. I think this is the point that the point that we got in the charter originally, because we wanted to make sure that we don't get a lot of individuals who really just want to represent their company, who really just want to represent their business interest in NCSG. And since just about everyone is a non-commercial user in some aspect of their lives, we're open, and we're much more open than all the other stakeholder groups and ICANN. And so, you know, it's easier for individuals to join us, and we need to be cautious of how that could open us up to gaming, particularly by commercial interests. And so that we want people to, when you join, say you're going to represent non-commercial interests. You're not going to just, you know, be here really representing your boss or your client or something like that. And so that's why that's in the charter. And then I think why we have it here as a reason why somebody could be kicked out is if it turns out that somebody is only, as you say, in action, indeed, things that can be documented, pushing for commercial agendas, pushing for more copyrights, pushing for their boss's agenda, for a commercial enterprise or something like that, then we could say, look, you're just too commercial. You're not even representing non-commercial interests here. Then somebody could be kicked out. I mean, we've never done this before, but I think at some point in time, you know, it's bound to happen. It's something that we need to have there, I think, as a disincentive for somebody to try to behave that way, to know that if you do that, you're going to be kicked out.
Right. So I guess it would be useful to write here some more explanations for it, to the extent that a member who openly espouses policies that are against agreed on NCSG policies, or openly becomes supports commercial positions or things like that. So some extra text here would be useful to make this understandable to members.
I think it's important that, you know, the first thing that you said, who espouses a position that's not an NCSG position, I wouldn't even go that far, because I think, you know, we've got a lot of diversity of viewpoints among our non-commercial users. And so, you know, sometimes when we're forced to come to a single answer on things, we're going to have a lot of people who will disagree with that issue or that decision within our own stakeholder group. And I don't think that, you know, them still holding their legitimate non-commercial yet minority position should get them disqualified from membership. So I think we've really got to focus it in on if you are, you know, if that'll be a non-commercial position that you're putting forward, and if it's commercial, that's why it gets flagged, not because it is a different non-commercial opinion, but because it is a commercial agenda that's being promoted.
Okay, yes, that makes sense. That's definitely a good point, that we certainly have disagreements within our group that are not based on commercial versus non-commercial, but we have different understandings of what is a good thing for non-commercial. So certainly don't want to have people simply a minority opinions being kicked out automatically. So some kind of here that says that anybody espousing blatantly commercial positions or whatever, some text like that. We don't not need to go wordsmithing at this point, but we need something to detect there. Agreed. Okay, let's look at the next one. The individual member no longer has to register domain name that is used primarily for non-commercial uses that was provided on initial membership application. I think this is too much. It's possible for members to change their domain or lose it for some reason that they were out of control and so forth. So at least it has to give some option for them to notify or give us a new domain if that's the case, and in case it's been lost due to some malicious activity somewhere or whatever and they are fighting to get it back, we have to wait until it happens and so on. Robin?
Yeah, I think that's for the most part right, and I think we can fix a lot of the problems that might come up from those situations that you've just mentioned by transmuting an application from the criteria. You know, we have several criteria by which you can be a member, and one of them is not that because you own a non-commercial domain name, it is just because you are a non-commercial user. And so if you want, if I guess what we could do in this instance is see if they want to switch their membership from the criteria, you know, they're a member because they've got a non-commercial domain name. That's what gives them eligibility. So switch that to they can be a member because they are a non-commercial user of domain names. So, I mean, it's sort of just kind of paperwork on our part and them making sure, you know, a check-in with us and with them that they're still a non-commercial user. Maybe they don't have this domain name anymore, but, you know, they're still consider themselves non-commercial users. And so we would just basically switch their membership from the one criteria to the other criteria. And we wouldn't necessarily have to kick them out. It would just be, you know, a change in our records as to why they're eligible to be a member.
Right. So in case we detect someone or somebody's complained about on those grounds, we contact them and ask them, do you have another domain that fits this criteria or do you want to switch your eligibility grounds to the second type? So that only needs a bit of rephrasing there. And in the second next one, I see that I'm moving up. If an individual member who has no domain name and who is not primarily concerned with non-commercial public interest aspects of policy, so under what situation can you think of this being applicable? That someone is no longer, again, it seems to be the same as the first one, basically the only situation where this could happen, that someone's interest switched from non-commercial to a commercial side. So or can you think of some scenario where this would apply, but the first one does not?
Well, maybe they've taken a new job and sort of now they're going to work for a contracted party or, you know, there's really, their life is changing such the direction that they're just not going to be advocating or working in the non-commercial space anymore, that they're role in internet governance is has moved to maybe the government side or the commercial side. I think that's the distinction there. It's a slight distinction, but I think it's an important one. It's worth keeping.
Yeah, it's certainly worth keeping in our as an application criteria. I understand you think of any realistic scenario where this would happen, but. We need to, what's that, social enterprises are really relevant here as well, comment. Did I see that John wrote that? Can you explain?
I wonder if that's more appropriate for the organizational component as opposed to the individual members. I mean, because wouldn't it be the organization, the association as a whole, that's applying for membership? Or are these all individuals within the association that might be applying?
We are talking about the individuals now, individual members.
Yeah, no. Right. Social, a lot of individuals are also choosing to register their businesses as a social enterprise, and it's, again, it's a business with a social agenda. That's the reason I put it in there. Because that's going to come up as people wanting to be members of NCSG or NCUC. So just to keep it on the track of it, that's all. It's an emerging model.
Okay, I'm still not clear how that would be practically interpreted in removing a member. But in some context, if we are thinking of them joining some organization or whatever, that it would not necessarily become a non-commercial criteria here.
Well, just to clarify, it's how we interpret what the social enterprise is. I think that's what I guess we're getting at. After Robin has done some research, we can discuss it, how it's applicable for defining membership, that's all.
Okay, I think that would be, again, really for the above organizational members, but it's a good point to bring up. Okay, let's look at the next one. That's obvious enough. An individual who is represented at ICANN through another SO or GNSO stakeholder group, mainly that would apply in case someone does move over, gets a position in another SO or GNSO stakeholder group, then they would be, if somebody joins the business constituency, they might kick them out without further questions. That's clear enough, I think. Robin?
Yeah, I was just going to say, and we have had that happen before. You know, we had a sitting counselor for the IPC wanted to join the NCSG at one point. We had to say, no, the GNSO rules don't allow that.
Yeah, and I think one of our old members moved over to IPC or as a representative. Okay. Anyway, that's certainly reasonably explicit as it is. The next one, an individual member who originally joined as employee or member of a large non-commercial organization and is now not now an employee or member of that organization. I think that's also reasonably clear. Does it need any additional explanations? Apparently it's clear enough to everybody. Robin?
Maybe we would just give this person the same opportunity as others that we talked about, where they said, okay, you're no longer eligible because you're an employee of a large organization, but you may be eligible because you own a domain name, a non-commercial name, or because you're primarily concerned about the public interest aspects of policy. Would you like to join? Would you like your membership to transmute into one of these categories? Just so. If we've got an actual person who's interested in me working on these issues just because, you know, not, no longer with an organization, I would hate to say that. And therefore, you know, you can't work with us anymore because we do have these other criteria that one could join. So maybe that would, like we discussed previously, be a more of an administrative matter where we would just say, okay, would you want to be a member for one of these other criteria, because you have a non-commercial domain name or because you're primarily concerned with public interest aspects, or maybe you're done with the ICANN space entirely and you want us to remove you from the membership roles. You know, what would your preference be in that case? I think this is what we've got to do with a lot of these, you know, because we're not trying to kick people off the membership rolls who, you know, this isn't an exercise of that. It's just an exercise of trying to get good records and, you know, make sure that we're doing what we're supposed to be doing and not making it difficult for people to participate, encouraging participation, provided that one does fit under our actual criteria.
Yes, definitely. Actually, I think we'll have to write this down in the removal process down there, that in any case we gave them a chance to explain and possibly change their position. Of course, there are a couple of cases we will not be accepting, like say the moving the business constituency, but we might give them a warning that, okay, if you give that up, you can come back to us or something. But in general, the process would be that we contact the member and notify that it seems that they are no longer eligible. Do you want to do something about it and give them an option of switching to different category or resigning up to them at that point. So that's the general principle. Although, looking at the next item, that's one case where we can't do that, obviously, that we cannot let dead people stay in. But, and otherwise, in general principle, would be that we contact them, ask them, offer them options if there are any. So, but otherwise, this is, definition is clear enough that it does not need to be elucidated much. Agreed? Okay, as I noted, the last item here is the death of an individual member. That's obvious enough. Do we want some criteria here somewhere for, say, permanent incapacitation. I think we actually had one case where a relative notified that they are so sick that they will no longer be able to do anything anyway. I wanted to move it. It's possible. Criteria, do we want something to that effect? And the other thing, criteria, do we have, okay, that's earlier on that this check-in process, but do we want some option like that? If we had one, I think we had one case. I'm not sure if it was NCS or some price. I can't create a case like this that relative notify that they are basically intensive care for the rest of their life, which will not be a long one. I'm not sure this is matters in practice, but should we write this up here somehow? And I'm not sure how to do that either, but I guess we can treat it as a request for that they are resigning on their own interest and if we are, I believe that, so maybe that's not need to write this up in any way. That's the thought. Maybe we are happy with this.
I think we can, you know, kind of leave that open. It's like you say, it's not really something that I expect we're going to have a problem with. You know, we can kind of leave some discretion to the leadership for how to handle that kind of a situation. And, you know, if for some reason somebody got removed and, you know, their evil relative sent an email saying they're dead and or they're incapacitated, remove them from the membership world when it turns out they're not. I think we have no problem reinstating them. So, you know, I think we can leave this with a little bit of discretion for the leadership on how to handle that. I don't think we really need to codify anything unless and until we've got a problem.
Okay, agreed. No need to worry about that. Okay, let's look at the process and who can initiate that. Okay, first the member themselves should notify, but if they don't, okay, there is one issue here that to contact NCSG member or the chair or a member of NCSG to effect resignation. Well, obviously that's not quite enough. We have to at least have it on record somewhere so that there's a practical process that would be sufficient, but before it becomes in effect, the chair or the EC member would have to bring it to the EC so that we can actually put it in our, make a formal decision. We should have somewhere on record that these members have been removed.
I think that just meant, you know, to sort of begin the process of, you know, you notify the chair, you notify a member of the EC, and then that person, you know, can bring it to the rest of the group to get that discussion started. I think that was really the intention of how do you initiate that process, not complete it, but just to get the initiation affected.
Yes, okay, so just write it up a little that remove that word effect request resignation and then it will be okay, some text that it will be noted by the EC or something to that effect. So in any case, that's obvious. In practice, no problem. There's nothing that for the record, which should make it clear that it cannot happen that some member of the EC can claim at some point that this member notified them of their resignation and therefore they have already been removed without telling the rest of the EC. So that's what kind of situation. I think it should be clear that the process works, that it will be moved to the EC to approve it. But that's merely a little clarification for the text. And there's two, that any NCSC member in good standing, including members of the EC, may request review of eligibility. And how request submitted or forwarded to the NCSG EC, again, it basically should be sent to the chair or a member of the EC would be right there, but maybe do we need to specify it there? I think in general, notification to the chair would be the way to go, but we might leave it open at any way that it goes to, as long as the EC notes and processes it. So, because we'd like to have some submit it to forward to the AEC. Maybe that's enough, but might be. But we think of how a member reading this who wants to complain about some other member that they are no longer eligible, what they should do. So we should at least have the preferred method, like contact the chair.
Well, I would suggest we leave it open that they contact any member of the EC. Maybe they're an NPOC member or an NCUC member, and so they feel like they're going to go to their representative to bring this matter to the executive committee. I mean, I think it's the duty, it's the obligation of executive committee member receives that notification to immediately forward it on to the entire committee. So, you know, I'm not sure we want to narrow it down to a single member that must be notified, that you could bring it to any member of the EC who will then, whose duty is then to forward it on to the entire EC for discussion.
Yes, I actually meant that I would prefer the text just like above, that the chair or a member of the EC, the same text as above, that simply for make it clear that either will do, but there would be some that, okay, that's actually a good, I think that's actually a perfect text here, that just contact the NCST chair of the EC, who will then forward it to the entire EC for discussion, decision. Is that good enough? Use the same text as above, basically, that for that.
Works for me.
Okay. So, well, we need to, this leaves a bit word smithing to make it look pretty, but otherwise the substance is agreed on. Okay, B, when? Now, the EC will establish an automatic periodic review process to examine any such requests, or alternatively, will process requests for evaluation as they are received to be complete within 30 days of submission. 30 days is actually a bit short. Sometimes we have had longer breaks between EC meetings. We might have that either a bit longer period or the next meeting of the EC or something. Although I will note that in some cases it may be easy to decide it. So we may need multiple meetings to come to a decision. And of course, when we say we'll process requests, it does not imply that we have to make a decision at that point. And of course, normally that's what would happen is that we make an initial evaluation and contact the member in person to let them give them a chance to change their status or explain themselves or whatever. So this needs a bit more details there that.
Well, I think the idea was that we as an executive committee would have our first pass at, our first decision, if you will. We would make an effort to try to reach that within 30 days. That's, again, an arbitrary number that I just picked out of a hat, and it sounds like you think that might be not long enough to give us time. But I think, bear in mind, though, this is just sort of for this initial evaluation, that then they can appeal if they want to. And so, you know, it's not like that's just the end of it. That you know, that's just for the step of us reaching our decision. And I kind of don't want to have people hanging, you know, have their application hanging in the balance for a long time. So I was thinking we would want to, you know, get them the courtesy of, you know, a very short turnaround period. But again, this is just kind of pulling numbers out of a hat. And if you think that's not a realistic time frame, then, you know, let's change it to something that would work for people. And again, you know, we've got two possibilities here, and I didn't really have a recommendation about which way I thought we should go in terms of an automatic review process or individual ones. You know, like we process the individual ones when they come in, but then at the same time, it kind of works out that every month we go through them one by one. So, you know, there's pluses and minuses to doing it either way, and I'm not really sure that I have a preference, but we should probably, you know, pick one and then set up procedures according to that preference.
Thank you. I think that we will not get all that many of these kind of requests, and in that case, the second option would seem to be lighter. Of course, if we expect to get dozens of appeals every month, then the preview process would make more sense, but I don't see that. As for the time period, I just want to be sure that it's so long that we will actually have time to have an EC meeting. And then if some, in the case of a meeting that doesn't have everybody present, we have to wait for another until we get, which happens often enough. So that's only have the technicalities that we actually have time to do it. That's another possibility here is that we could give, say, the chair the option of contacting the per member in question in advance, just for asking information and offering these options before the EC actually makes a decision. That kind of preliminary inquiry process might be possible. And then if we do, that's viable, then we should write it in here. That, for example, that as an option, that once the notice has been given, that the EC, whatever way it goes to the chair, who can contact the member in question and ask for more information or ask an explanation and so forth, and then bring that to the next EC meeting. That would speed it up. But of course, the final decision would have to be made by the EC in any case. What do you think about that? And if so, do we need to write it here? Because, of course, it can be argued that that would be within the discretion of the chair anyway to contact the member without, as long as no decisions are being made. But we might want to write it up so that it's clear that that option exists. And the deadline, 30 days, should either be long enough, make sure that we have time for a meeting, or just put then at the next meeting of the EC after receiving the request. Robin?
I was just trying to make sure I understood what you were proposing for the procedure. I'm not sure I followed that. I'm sorry.
Okay, I'll try to explain again. I think how this practically happens when there's such a request for removing a member comes to the EC, that the chair would be notified first, or if it doesn't come directly to the chair, the EC member who gets it notifies the chair, and chair either may or should contact the member in question first and tell them that this has happened and will be processed by the EC in the future meeting, and give them a chance to provide additional information at that point, so that it will not need to be fast to do it that way, that when the EC gets to decide it, then there is already additional information, in particular possible explanation from the member in question who's being considered.
Okay, so it sounds like the member would maybe have an opportunity once they're notified that this request has been received, that they would then have an opportunity to sort of start building a case, if you will, saying, oh, but that's incorrect because of these reasons and that reason, and you're misunderstanding this because of this and that and the other. And so sort of start the process of, they kind of begin to build their case about why that request is wrong. And that makes sense to me. Thinking about, the original requester and how do we, do we want to give them an opportunity to then answer to rebut the member's statements, or, I'm just kind of thinking this through out loud here. I guess they could listen to the EC meeting where these issues are being discussed, or read the EC mailing list where these facts are discussed, and if they still dispute or still feel like their points are not being represented properly, could on their own contact the EC and say, oh, but that's not true because of this, or, oh, but there's this other thing that they're not talking about. I'm just trying to work this out, brainstorm, if you will, about how to create.
Yeah, I agree very much. We would have to have a dialogue with both the original complainant as well as the member in question. But shall we give the chair discretionary option to do that on their own before bringing C. In the end, of course, that will happen, but it could be faster that give them that the chair can first contact the member in question and ask them, and contact the complainant if need be, and so on, to collect them with more information and details before bringing it to the EC, just to save time, basically. And because if we do nothing until we bring it to the EC, then we'll have to most likely conclude, yeah, okay, now we have to ask this member and come back and so forth. So we could make the process speed up by giving the okay, or tasking the chair to do some this kind of preliminary work.
Yeah, I think that sounds fair. I'm also kind of wondering, though, to what extent would we want to have the EC member of whichever constituency they're a part of, you know, give them the option to sort of...
Yeah, that's actually a good point. We should actually do...
Included. Okay. Yeah.
But of course, yes, yeah, we should, in case they are a member of a constituency, which some people are not, we should contact that constituency's... okay, let the EC member of that constituency be involved, or maybe even contact the EC of that constituency, either way. Do we need to write this here, or have that?
I think it's worth writing down.
So should we put that the initial stage would be conducted by the chair and the EC member from that constituency?
Yeah, okay. Just
preliminary inquiry here, that collecting information for the EC to make a decision. They will not be making any decisions, just finding out.
Yeah, you know, that basically says this complaint has been lodged against you. Here are the facts, and, you know, how do you answer? You know, I mean, obviously that's very short, but that's kind of the point of what we're talking about here.
Yes.
And then they would, you know, the theory is maybe they would have an advocate, because they've got a representative on the EC that will be objective, but also, you know, kind of have an incentive to make sure that you're dealt with fairly.
Yes, something like that, yeah. So that we write it down here that the chair, in together with the EC member from the member's constituency, will contact the member and ask for explanation, and then after, if they feel it necessary, contact the complainant again. I do not want to make too much of a formal requirement what they have to do, although I'm actually happy to put tasks on the chair, because I won't be the chair when this happens. But I hope, I suspect this will not happen until much time. So, but in principle, it would be faster to process this with the chair and that constituency's representative talking with the member in question and collecting this information. So what we should write here is something to the effect that the chair, in together with a representative from that constituency, if the member in question is a member of a constituency, will contact them and ask for, notify them that this kind of complaint has been made, and ask them for to explain themselves or give them up. Make,
yeah, that sounds
whatever,
right.
Yeah. And of course, that's involving the constituency representative, it makes sense also, because this will automatically imply expelling the member from the constituency as well if they get kicked out of the stakeholder group. So, yeah, that makes sense in that respect also. Okay, so the process will be roughly that, and we give the chair and the EC member collect information, and then they are required to bring it to the EC within a period of time at the next meeting, or maybe 60 days is actually, I think that's long enough. I don't think we ever had longer break between EC meetings than that. That it should be brought to the, for initial evaluation to the EC within 60 days. And then the EC shall reach a decision of some kind, and then notify the member in question the decision, and again wait for their, they have, can appeal, say that, oh no, that was wrong decision, that was the case, and give them another chance to appeal, and then I think there's still, the charter requires that even the membership can appeal that, but it's in the what else stage here, I've noticed it already. But if we are going to expel someone, when the EC has decided that, okay, this member must go, what shall we do? So we have to notify the membership. I see that you have written here that any decision to terminate membership by the NCHC is taken by 80% threshold vote of NCHC members. Can we do that? Because our charter says that the decisions are made by full consensus.
Yeah, unless we decide otherwise. So if we decide, you know, this is one of those places where we may want to decide that we want a different consensus level. And so that's a, you know, that's an option if we that we need to consider what would like for this consensus to be made, to be. What is the appropriate threshold for this kind of a decision? You know, it's a big deal kicking somebody out.
yes, but
if we require unanimity, that might go too far. I don't know. This is an open question.
Okay. It makes sense also that some cases it might be that some EC member would have to recuse themselves. Actually, even in a theoretical case, it might be an EC member who we are about to expel.
Right.
Oh, that's certainly very possible. So the 80% threshold means all but one, in effect.
One who is eligible. Eligible, you know, like you said, if we've got an EC member who needs to recuse themselves, then they're taken out of the percentage.
Yes, in that case, the 80%, out of four remaining, 80% means everybody. So 70% would actually, as John's suggesting here, would mean that in case one is recusing themselves, then one of the others could be still overridden. Okay, this needs some more discussion, but I agree that we might want to have a lower threshold and full consensus here. But it's not obvious how to do that, and I'm not quite sure, but we'll have to read the charter with detail whether we can actually do that. But yes, let's.
Yeah, we can, but we have to make a decision to do it. You know what I mean? So.
Can we make that kind of decision binding on future ECs, for example, or would it be something that a new EC when.
Well, a new EC could change their own up. You know, they could change their operating procedures as they like, I would think.
Yes, okay, so I guess we can. But let's think about this percentage and try to come up with some hypothetical scenarios where this would apply. And members found to be ineligible and will inform member of decision to terminate membership. And they have to request reconsideration, 2 weeks to request reconsideration. Maybe that is a bit short again, but or maybe not. That's... In that case, there is no... Okay, how long can we assume that some member would be offline in the worst case? I think maybe 30 days would be better here as well. Or 3 weeks.
Okay.
I have occasion to be 3 weeks offline, so that's impossible. So a bit longer there. And they can request an online hearing, which the CEC shall grant if requested. In brackets, do we want that option?
Well, I sort of feel like, you know, let's give a person a chance to make their case to the group, you know, to the group. If they want, if the, you know, if after we've decided they should be kicked out and they're still really, really, really sure they belong in, sure, let's grant them an opportunity to explain why we were wrong, and if they can convince us, great.
Do we want a time limit on how soon the hearing will be arranged?
Well, I think we need to have some kind of time frame. Otherwise, you know, 2 years later, you might be getting.
Okay, we already have a limit on how soon they request the reconsideration, and then we should have a time limit on how soon we offer that hearing if they want that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we should to be a place safe the data limit there, because just in case some EC decides to, oh, we can't be bothered with that, let's sleep over this for 2 years. So, but I'm not sure if this really matters. And the request for reconsideration shall be decided within 30 days. Is that we shall within the 30 days decide whether they approve or not, or 30 days make that hearing? That timeline I'm thinking about, how soon we should get the hearing, so that, do we need to be more detailed here? If we are promising to grant that telephone online hearing,
then we need more time to make the final decision. Yeah. So this time frame I just kind of threw out there to you know, change.
Anyway, that's something we need to make the timeline here clear enough that it will not be a problem when it actually happens. And after that, we have make a final decision after those 30 days or whatever, then the terminated member may appeal a decision by requesting a full vote of membership. And again, the 2 weeks, I would put it 3 weeks or 30 days, but otherwise this is...
Yeah, that sounds fair. 2 weeks is not very long. I don't know why.
Vacation periods and the like, 2 weeks is a bit short.
Yeah.
So make it 30 days. Members have obligation to notify the EC of any pertinent change of membership status. I'm not sure what this actually implies, because if they forget and somebody complains, they may we ask them and then they do it. So, but it should be a good to have this somewhere in our operating procedures, but not necessarily in the this member removal process anyway, because most likely nobody will ever remember it to the come to this point, so we have to remind them on some level, but in this document it doesn't really make any substantial difference that I can see.
Well, I think the point is just so that members have an understanding that, you know, if your membership status changes, please notify us so we can make the changes in our records. You know, like you say, it's not really something that we can, you know, we're not going to disqualify somebody out immediately because they didn't necessarily notify us, but it's helpful for them to know that should your membership status change, please notify us so we can make the changes in our records, and because we can't do anything on our end until we're notified by somebody of something. And
yes, we definitely need to have this somewhere. I'm just thinking of what's the logical place to put this in.
Yeah.
But yeah, something we need to have this somewhere. There's a note about suspending the voting rights until new eligibility is established. Well, in principle, I like that. I'm just trying to think of it in practice. And considering also that this somebody else makes that notification, complains that another member has changed it, and we are in the process of considering that removal, should we have an option or requirement that we suspend their voting rights while the process is going on? That's also a bit of a problem. So I'm not sure how this works. That needs a bit more thought, I think.
Yeah, I would say once there's been an initial evaluation that they should be suspended, that they're ineligible, then their voting rights would be suspended, I think. But not until an initial evaluation, not just based upon, you know, somebody's made a complaint and there's a complaint pending, but it seems there has to have been at least some kind of a substantive evaluation before their voting rights can be terminated.
Yes, that's something we need to discuss a bit more. I'm not sure how to do that, but something like that would be useful.
Yeah, that's going to need more fleshing out.
Yes. Okay. And the final paragraph here, that everything is transparent and publicly archived and so on, is definitely... we should do absolute agreement on there. I'm not sure if this text looks actually good to me as it is. I hope nobody wants to has to make secret decisions.
Yeah, and I think too the point is you know, we just want to have all our ducks in a row, have everything documented. We have an initial complaint documented. We have any evidence that was
put forth documented. We have any arguments, any counter-arguments, you know. But we've got all of this documented, and it's all accessible for anyone to see. You know, if they want to make some kind of special request of please don't tell my secret about this, that, the other. Well, we can deal with that separately on a case-by-case basis. But the initial, you know, the default is all this stuff goes up publicly.
Okay, do we want to clarify this so that if we have the chair doing some initial inquiries, that correspondence also be public and documented?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea, and we'd want to let the person know that, you know, these correspondences are considered part of the public record, so
yeah.
Be aware of that when you respond.
Yes, so and that should be written out here to make it clear that there will be no secret process first and until so everything is in the record. Okay. I think we have pretty much covered this agreement on what this should substantively contain, most of the part. There were some open issues that need more thought, but otherwise it's time to start. Let's try to write this up, prettify it enough that we can then circulate it in the public list and ask members for comments. I'm sure there will be many. Okay?
Okay, so is my task then to now to go back and rework this document based upon these suggestions, or was somebody else going to do that? I'm happy to do it, but if somebody else is also, you know, eager to, I don't want to. I don't want to step on anything.
I think everybody will be happy if you do the next art iteration as well, so that you work it out once more, bring it to the next EC meeting, we look it up and then decide if it's okay, and then throw it out to the public for comments. Okay?
That works for me.
Good. Okay, so much for that. We have still a few minutes time. One item we actually had already on the agenda in Hadrid, but we didn't have time to discuss it, is the new member database, and in particular there's one item that we need EC members to attend, namely the interface for board members for reviewing new applications, where my basic requirement that I paste them, it should be at least as easy as it is with Google Docs, and preferably easier. It's not ready yet, but there is a mock-up that you can see if you want. So Joan, I believe you already have. At least you have access to it. So if you feel like looking at it at this point, it still definitely needs more work. But at some point, I want all our EC members to take a look and see if this looks sensible to you. So if you want, we can get access to the test version already. We are having a call with a developer on Monday. So if you have time to look at it over the weekend, I'll kind of try to get you access. If not, well, it will be a little better next time. I don't expect it to be in use until next year anyway. I still very much hope it will be ready and pretty and polished by Copenhagen, but at least, unless something really bad happens, it will be functional by then, even if a bit rugged on the edges. So, actually, that's just for you, Robin. If you want to, if you feel like you have spare time over the weekend, I can try to get you access now. But just after Monday, we'll have a meeting, and then I'll at least will send to all EC members. Please look at this.
Okay, so why don't I wait and have a look at the next iteration with the next folks?
Okay, I'll let you know. As I said, we have a call on this on Monday, and we'll try to get it to a stage where we can a bit more polish. This is only the first iteration that I have seen. I'm not sure if Joan had time to look at it at all. So it definitely needs more work. I can certainly have my own points that need to be clear before that. So maybe you can wait until the next round. Okay. Anything else? Okay, looking at the discussion notes, the action item that we take to the NCSG discuss list, do we want to make a formal decision on that at this point? That we may take it to the discuss already? I'm happy to just leave it to you if you want, and at any time. If not, we'll take it on the next our next call and bring it up there and decide how to proceed. But if you want to start, because as I said, that we might want
I think with the election that's going on right now, let's wait.
Okay.
Until after the election.
So that action item is to move to the next VC call to discuss this item. And we will actually, before the call, I think we'll notify the discussers that this will be going on and have it. Well, whatever. But anyway, we'll postpone that until for time being. Mariam, make note that this action item is take this issue to the next VC call.
Tiffany, can you repeat the action item, please?
So that instead of moving it to the discuss list now, we will take this as an agenda item for our next VC call. So we move this take to the NCSC discuss list. It takes to the next VC call.
So the next VC call, right?
Yes, an agenda item there.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, do we have any other business? Does anybody feel like discussing the intersessional here? Noting that we have a call about that on Monday. No?
Well, if you've got any... you know, my position there all the while is that, you know, I'm pretty flexible. I can go just about anywhere, anytime. But if you've got any idea about where that's heading, or if I should until after the call Monday to hear where that's heading.
Well, I'm going to, as I did the poll, I will post the results at some point. I was hoping to be a bit more opinions, but I can already tell that it's not going to be a conclusive decision. In all time frames, there will be somebody who can't make it. So I guess we'll be back to the debate we already had about what's appropriate, what would be most useful for us, and we'll see how it works out. No, do note that in April, May time frame, there are lots of other events that some of our people will be in, so it will be very hard to find a convenient time there. But
yeah, I think it's going to be hard to find, you know, there's always going to be an event going on somewhere. There's always going to be somebody who can't go to something. So, you know, we just do the best we can. We try to accommodate the most number of members who are actually planning to attend the meeting, who should be at the meeting. And, you know, it isn't going to work for some people, but, you know, do the best we can to try to accommodate most.
And also, of course, consider what will be most useful for us for the purpose of the meeting. So whether it's actually better for whatever we are trying to do. For example, some issues that we need to discuss would be good to decide sooner rather than later. So at least that August-September time frame doesn't seem to be a good plan. Also, I might note it's also a very difficult time for several people because of the academic seasons and so forth, so I don't think that's going to have a fly in any case. But April, May might work in that respect, but it's very busy season. There's quite a lot of events, so it's all about, actually February seems to be a problem mainly for Rafik, but that's also, of course, significant in itself. Anyway, but we don't have anything substantive to say about it here, so let's drop that. Anything else? Any other business? Okay, let's close this meeting then. Thank you, everybody, for participating.
Phil, thank you very much for your support today. You may now stop the recording. Thank you all for attending. Goodbye. Have a good weekend.